As Andreas said, will be discussion, and so we have several collaboration here that use the expansion in slightly different context, and the goal is just to exchange wise or unwise experience. And so I'm not an expert on this. Everything correct that I learned is from Ren, Yuji, Andreas, and Dapping. and so the calculation of the semi-leptonic decay matrix element has been very successful recently, and so there have been several paper in the last year, and the precision of what we call the extrapolation is obtained by doing a Z expansion. And so I was thinking to just trying to make sure everybody understand. So what is the parametrization of the form factor? And so this form factor, F plus and F zero. And so everything I will say is about B to pi or K plus leptons. Now there are people who also use it for baryons, and they are not, you don't need to change too much. And then, so I will briefly remind you what is Z of Q square and a parameter that is adjustable and which is T0. And then also remind you what is BGL and BCL. And then I will, so these are just, so I should do that maybe in 10 minutes. And then the questions, they fall in three categories, unitarity, thresholds, and poles. So, and so I mean, this is a very technical discussion, so if at any time you feel that you are wasting your time, I will not be offended if you leave the room. Okay. So, so there are three collaborations that I know that use this parametrization. So there's a Fermi-Milk, there's HPQCD, and there is RBC. And so they use more or less the same notation. There are a small variation if you read the paper carefully. And so the typical parametrization that people use is the BCL. And so L is Lelouch, and this is Bourli, and I don't remember who is C, and so it's FizzRev. Caprini, yeah, that's right. So, and so the ancestor of, so that this is a 95, and then there is a paper by Boyd and Savage, and I will abbreviate it as SB in 96. And then there is also a paper by Lelouch that is more Lattice paper.
And the B and the L is the same?
No. It's well, some of the B are the same. This B are the same. This is a Greenstein, and this is Lebed. So this is a different. This is a different. So one standard parameter. So if you read the, so there are four papers in the last year on the. BDK, so there are basically four processes. So it's a B to K or pi into a charge pair, or B to K or pi into mu plus mu minus, or E plus E minus. And so the standard parametrization that is used in these three collaborations, so you have a prefactor, which is Q squared minus MB star. Now, the so for three of the process is the B star, and for one of the process is the B star S. So it's B star S only for B into K lepton is an opposite dilepton. So. And then you have a sum of BK. And now the threshold question will appear.
This is MB star squared.
Sorry, yeah, MB star squared. Thank you. So the So this is the Z expansion in the BCL version. And so you will use ZK here. And then you have NK, which is the maximal degree to which you will want to go. And so it's minus 1 K minus NK. And then you have K over NK, and then you have the Z and K. And so this term, so it goes to NK minus 1. And so this term guarantees that the derivative is a 0. At, so you have derivative. Zero at z equal minus one, and so I will. If you are not familiar, I will tell you what is the mapping. And so this is the standard parametrization that you will find for F plus that has a non. So that has a non pole here. And it is sometimes used also for the F0, and sometimes it's used without the pole. So there are two versions, and sometimes a threshold condition is imposed on F0, sometimes it's not. Now, the Z expansion of the form factor is obtained from other form factors that are calculated on the lattice, which are F per and F parallel, which are the component parallel and perpendicular to the V mu, so the velocity of the B quark. And now there are also variation if these should have some poles or not is something that is being discussed. Now, in the BCL, there is a constraint that comes from unitarity, and this constraint is that the sum of coefficients that I call B and M, multiplying the coefficient of the expansion is less than that. And so compared to BGL, this has a simple prefactor but complicated constraint. And
what is the capital BNM?
These are calculable function from the mapping between the BGL parametrization and the BCL. So in the BGL, you have a complicated form, and so your series is reshuffled. And I mean, I can write you the function, but they are kind of large. So the BCL, you have something like this. So you have something that is called the Blask factor. What? Well, it's a more than a pole. It has a pole, but it's more than a pole. And then there is a function phi that is calculated with a perturbative QCD. And then there is a sum. This is the BGL form. So this is the BCL, and this is the BGL. So then you have the sum of the AK, ZK. And the unitarity constraint is that the sum of the AK square is less than 1. And so they have a complicated prefactor and a simple unitarity condition. And in the other case, they have a simple prefactor and a complicated constraint. And so question is if the unitarity is ab initio. constraint, and it's clearly not exactly the case. However, I think it is very difficult to make a reasonable fit without having this kind of condition. So that's the first question of discussion. The second question of discussion is if this threshold condition makes sense in the sense that we can only fix 3 or 4 parameters and that the threshold is under the boundary of the disk of convergence. And I personally think that the threshold condition tells you nothing about what B4 or B3 should be. So that's my opinion. And then the question that I mentioned that is mostly concerned F0, and should we put a pole or not in the F0? So these are the three types of question.
And to the non-experts, will you say how Z depends on Q squared?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the second. That's a part two. Okay.
And boundary condition is there also in BGL, right? Is in both?
Or? No, it's to the best of my knowledge, it appears for the first time in BCL. But maybe Okubo may have told about this. But
first person to do this was Okubo.
So the Z mapping was invented by Okubo. So now the question, what is the Z expansion? What is the Z mapping? Yep.
Before you do that, since Daniel asked about those B and M and the phi.
Yep.
As Yannick said, there's some perturbative QCD that comes in there, so the unitarity constraint is not ab initio, but there is some unitarity constraint that you can do. And you follow through a calculation, and you can derive phi by imposing a simple condition, or you can impose phi equals 1, basically, and then derive what those numbers be.
So
what's in K?
What is in NK, ah, 2, 3, 4, so it depends on how brave and how good your data is.
So basically how, if you go larger in NK, you're converging to...
Okay, so now, maybe when I explain what is the Z expansion, so the basic idea is that you map the cut Q square plane into a disk, and so the this part here will be mapped on the
the cut itself, the T plus.
Yeah, yeah. When you go to infinity, when you go to this is the point at so you have to understand this. So this is, so the this will be mapped here, and then when you go to infinity, you will get to this point. Okay. So when So you have to understand this as the infinite. You have to understand it on the Riemann the Riemann sphere, if you want. And so this, what is E, is something you basically don't want to think about. And now, so this is the Z plane, and your kinematic range is a little circle in the middle. And you have data somewhere here. And because when the energy gets too large, it's difficult to make lattice calculation, and you want to extrapolate to this region. So that's the idea of the Z expansion. Now, do you agree, Andreas? Okay, so now the Z mapping, so is a function of Q square, which is, so Q is P B minus P pi or K, so P pseudoscalar. And then there is a free parameter, which is T zero. And so you can write this. Now, so you have a T plus, and in fact, I should write this as T cut, which correspond to the place where you need to start the cut, minus Q square. And then you have T cut minus T0, and then you divide by the same thing, but with a plus. And so you see the obvious property is that now if you go at T0, it is zero, so you decide which energy you want to map, or which momentum square you want to map on the zero. Then, so when you are at T cut, this is zero, and this is zero, so you get minus one. And so this point is mapped into this point here. So the beginning of the cut is mapped on the minus one. Now, so when you are, when, so you have Z, Q square real and larger than T cut. So you see that it becomes, so it has the form IA minus B over IA plus B, and so you see that it is 1.
So Yannick, where over here is T0?
T0 is wherever you want.
Draw a point.
So that's it's a point. Yeah, so typically.
To the left of the cut.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a so that this is a bad drawing. let's see. So you.
That's why I didn't want you to draw the cut all the way around.
So typically, you want to take it on the. So you want the boundary of your data to be there.
You choose it so that interval you're interested in the middle. Those hash lines as small as possible.
So you
which interval, the red one or the with the hash mark?
So that the physical range of Q squared is centered in the quantum zero.
So Q squared is more than zero. And so it is MB minus M pseudo scalar square. And so you want these 2 points to be on both symmetrically placed with respect to zero. And so this is your kinematic range. So your kinematic range is symmetrically placed about zero. Is that clear?
You don't have to do that, right?
No, you don't. So, for instance, people who do BGL have a different choice of T0. But so for people who do BCL, and this is the case for at least the three collaborations, so they take the kinematic range symmetrically placed about the z equals zero. And so the idea is that, so you have data here and you want to extrapolate in the smallest possible region.
And MPI is bion or kaon?
So I only know about these two cases.
Since this is a discussion, there are other cases where you might have neutrino scattering, say off of a neutron turning it into a proton, then Q squared is less than zero, right? And then that occupies the region between the pink stuff and a plus one. But for any given neutrino experiment, there'll be a certain energy range, and so you can choose T0 to move its interval back so that it's centered around.
So you have Q squared equals zero is E, and then this is deep inelastic scattering. And so when you take when Q squared goes to minus infinity, then you add one. So it goes E. This is MB minus MP squared. And this is the threshold. Okay.
Sorry, I'm missing a simple point. The cut begins at, the cut in Q square begins at B star, MB star?
For the process that I am describing, the cut, T cut, so for B, for k or pi plus lepton, t cut will be mb plus m pseudo scalar square. So it's the threshold for production of. You move the b. So you can think of neutrino electron scattering. So the future of Fermilab. And then you produce B-bar and a pion or a K. And so the threshold for that production is square is a T-cut. For bions, this is a more complicated story. Because you I believe you can produce stays that are lighter before producing the baryon. So if you do m lambda plus m proton, you might get a cut that starts before, which I believe is something you don't want. But, so that's the question.
But just to be clear, if you're doing lambda beta proton, the cut starts in the same place as for the meson process, mb plus m pi. That's where the cut will start. The b pi is artificial experiment can rescatter into lambda b proton.
Then you can add your state, but the pole and the cut will be different. Okay, let's see. So now there's one more thing, is that you can have poles. And so for instance, for B into K L nu bar, or B into pi L nu bar, you can have a B star in the you have to think again and in the so looking now in the S channel, and so you have a B star for these three process pi. So that, so for BS into K, the S is a spectator, and so you have a B star. For B into pi L, you have a B star. For B into K L L, now you have a B star S, and for B into pi LL, you have a B star. So you have a B star, B star. So the only different is the B K LL, where you have the resonance is, then you have S here. In the three other Ks, you have up or down. Okay? And so the F plus, so this is the pole for the, in addition, you will have poles that now appear outside of the kinematic region, but before the cut. Okay. Now, so you can look at numbers. So for the B2K, Z is of the order of 0.44 or less. And for the B to pi, Z is less than 0.28. There are a small variation if you have a B sub S, or really 43 or 44. But so these are the two type of range that you have. So it's 1/6 of the circle, and like less than 1/3 or 1/4 or 1/3. So it's a small interval. Okay. Then so the poles So for B to K, so the pole, now the pole is at two different places. So for B to KLL, the pole, the Z pole is minus 0.36. For B to pi, the Z pole is, so the pi or the K mass enter in this parameter. So the Z pole is minus 51. And now there is also the possibility of a zero plus pole. And so this is the...
This is for some choice of T0.
This is for the standard choice of T0, yeah. And so for the B to KL...
In particular, the same choice of T0 that leads to the numbers for the interval. Right, you see the sub-numbers... No, go back. No, not that far.
Up or down?
The 144. The 144 and the minus 0.36 use the same choice for T0.
Yeah, so the, it's basically determined by the mass of the K on the pi. And so now the same, so the same particle, the same pole has a different value for the, because the, it depends on T0. So, but the point is that you see this is more than twice. This, so it's here. This is also more than twice that. And so now there are also scalar poles. And so there is B sub S, I don't know what is the notation, 0 plus, it's a 5.71 GeV. And this is a Daniel Mohler estimate. And there is a B, so that's a kind of a star B, 0 plus. Down star is something like 5.6 GeV, and the estimate that I know is from Bardeen in 2003. We also did it by eye with a table that you gave us. So, but so for these poles, the Z. Is so the Z plus E is at minus 0.66, and for the pion it is in the cut because it's
so these are all stable particles under strong interactions, is that right?
So the D sub D is not at all stable.
Yeah, so it's dissolved.
So why is it being a pion, so it's not really a pole.
Wait, sir.
Instead, it's up in the cut. It's a, if you look at the analogous, the charmed meson, it is a really wide liquid, it's hard to find. The B sub S, like the D sub S, is just below BK threshold. So it's strong decay, violates isospin. And so it's hindered to the point that it's in a pretty narrow state. Well, the B sub S hasn't been observed, but the B sub S has been observed, and that was a surprise about it, that its mass was so low, and therefore its width was so narrow. And these papers by Dean Helen Eichten sort of elucidated that and predicted that you would also find a narrow state in B sub S, and that's what Mahler and company find on the lattice.
Yeah.
So the answer was they are, one of them's a pole, you can approximate by a pole, and the other should.
The B is zero.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
So what you see is that this is about at least twice the size, and so if these zero plus are there, they are farther up, and so if you go to the threshold, then it's even farther. And so the general idea is that, in, at least in my mind, is that the farther you go, the less contamination you have. To get the extrapolation here. So that's the rule of the game. Now, now that you have some numbers in mind, so you see that if you take the beta 4, if you take B4, so when you have, so for instance, you have this here, so you see that Z4 is less than like 10 to the minus 3. So it's a small number. And so unless the coefficient B are large, they disappear in the noise. And basically, you can't fix them. And so the so to do an extrapolation, you have somehow to assume that the coefficients of B3, B4, B5 are not too large, and then because you cannot,
Can you explain why you want to have the derivative to vanish?
Ah, so you want to have F plus near the threshold to be like T plus minus T to the 3 half. So that's, and so when you take the derivative of this singular part, you see that it's a 1 half. And so when you take T going to T plus, the it goes, when you take Z going to minus 1, it goes to 0. So that's, so this is a BCL discussion.
Well, that behavior is there whether or not you do the Z expansion that follows from angular momentum.
Yeah. So this is a
physics input.
This is a physics input. Yeah.
Yeah.
However, I believe that to get to Z equal minus 1, you need thousands of coefficients. And then
it might be irrelevant.
It is. I believe it's.
Well, I think worse than irrelevant. Panic is afraid it might be misleading. Right? You put in what you think is as good a piece of physics as possible. The states of angular momentum one should have angular momentum one, but then it skews the expansion somehow because you have then a parameterization that's not in a position to describe that part of the function. I think that's your real worry,
right?
Not that it's useless, but that it is.
Well, we could do it from the second.
So what I see, you have B4 and Z to the 4, you know, it's 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 4, so it's a very small quantity. And so you probably put some kind of nonsense in it, but it's multiplied by something small, so it does not have a huge influence. On the other hand, I believe this is the official way to produce form factor. So
officially, you have to decide who the officer is, but that is the equation in the BCL paper, and that is the method preferred by Flag. But we should also note that F0 is couples to zero angular momentum. That's why Yannick was talking about the scalar resonance or nearly stable state over there. And so the analogous threshold behavior for F0 does not look like this. The exponent is not 3/2. I forget what it is. But
Is it different for F0? Yeah.
Right. what is it, Matt?
It's either one half or one. But
what that means is that in the case of F0, putting in that last term would not be putting in physics information, it would be introducing a mistake. The different angular momentum has a different threshold behavior. You should not put in the threshold behavior of angular momentum 1 in the channel that's angular momentum 0. Right, that's just
involved. So I looked.
If you say that someone put that term into an F0, shame on the referee.
What's the argument of that?
So you can, you can look in the literature, for instance, HPQCD has no threshold on F0 on the B2D paper, but they have it on the B sub S 2K.
And what's the argument of flag? Why is this preferred method?
For the BGL?
Yes.
I'm not a member of flag,
But
Enrico, it's Enrico's fault.
You're asking why the BCL instead of BGL?
Yeah.
Because we are very annoyed of the prefactor.
You know, in principle, the BCL paper claimed that the BCL form for F0 has the correct threshold behavior. That is true. It's a kind of advantage. But the thing is that you do have some good behavior at the threshold point, but you also lost some useful information that you will see when you really do a Z expansion feed. The thing is that this is true for F plus. For F0, the threshold behavior cannot tell you any extra information. So I tried it and eventually found that for F0, you just have the original form of the Z to the K, the order of Z to the K. You will not have any kind of extra term, complicated extra term like that. That is because the threshold behavior cannot really tell you extra information. So that is the form of the extra complicated term is the real information at the threshold. So that is the reason why some people claim the BCL is bad, because they claim the BCL reproduce the correct threshold behavior automatically.
Thank you.
But the constraints are stronger in BCL than in BGL.
They are stronger? So, to be honest, I don't know if anybody has calculated the asymptotic behavior. So they are function of n minus m, and so I don't know if you call this when n goes to infinity, I don't know what is the behavior. So if it goes like 1 over n, for instance, it's totally useless, because it would leave the b to be large, which is... So this is kind of a nice constraint if your first coefficient are substantial, because then you have an absolute bound on A4, A5, and so you multiply by Z maximum, and so you get an idea of the error. But this function is nasty.
It also is subject to change if somebody calculates it better.
Which one?
The function phi.
Yeah. But it's a.
But I think then the B coefficients change as well. Because in both cases, the starting point is unitarity. And when you say unitarity has to be less than or equal to something, and then something on the right hand side comes from doing the OPE and curvative QCD at the enormous Q square.
And the duality, the quark hadron duality. In your paper, you invoke the quark hadron duality. Mm-hmm.
So once you've decided the right hand side of the inequality, whether you do the hard work to derive phi or the hard work to derive E, I think it's the same work. It's just looking at it.
Yeah, but B you use just to constrain your fit, right?
Yeah.
So you should, the values of the B shouldn't really depend on B. While phi, your A depends on
that's
right.
That's true.
The A's
only have any meaning
once you look at phi. And the functions aren't pleasant to look at. But it seems that if you want to know the value of B, you have to know the value of phi first to derive the value
of phi.
So, I mean, I can write it if you want, but it's a
sequence.
Write phi when you want, everyone knows you. So I think the other comment relevant to this is that for F plus, the unitarity constraint is way too permissive. The coefficients that you find are much smaller than unitarity would suggest, and that's understood by heavy quark physics. So there's a paper by Becker and Hill that works this out using math and in a very vague physics way. The fraction of B decays that can, semi-atomic B decays that contain just one pion is a small fraction of all of them. So
have you done the exercise of doing both parameterizations and see if unitarity constrains more one or the other?
So the theory is that if you look at the real fit result, you will find that, first of all, for the F class, the unitarity constraint is really a very loose bound. From the result, you can see it's a very loose bound. The final fit result, even if you don't impose any extra information, you will find this sum is much smaller than one. The thing is that when you impose extra information from heavy quark estimate for this bound, then it makes the extrapolated result more reasonable, because sometimes you can look at some other constraints, like kinematic constraint at Q squared equals zero. So when you impose the the heavy quark bound to the fit, it makes your final fit result even more consistent with other constraints. So that means the heavy quark bound is a very much more useful bound than this one.
Directly Enrico's question is, yes, we've tried both. And in both cases, as Ren is saying, the unitarity constraint.
Both cases.
The reality is so far, for these decays, is so far from the unitarity constraint that's developed that the question isn't really interesting, whether something that doesn't constrain it at all or at all. Both cases.
So the fit is independent of this. You don't really need it to confine. No?
Okay. Yeah, or you can say the unitarity constraint itself is preserved naturally.
So the usefulness is the analyticity rather than the unitarity. Is that what you're telling us?
Mm-hmm.
So the what we call unitarity comes from the dispersion of dilation. And then you can write the bound from the dispersion relation as an integral over the cut of a function. And so you expand in Z and it becomes a Fourier expansion. And then this sum of the A squared is like the Planck-Schell law. So I think it's that sense that people call this unitarity.
What I meant is that everyone seems to like this expansion, and it's useful because you're saying unitarity doesn't constrain things too much.
It does for F0, but F0 comes up against unitarity.
Well, the thing is that for F0, first of all, if you read the original heavy quark estimate for that sum, that if you read that paper didn't say anything about F0 itself. So in principle, you cannot have an easy extra information from heavy quark theory to this sum for F0. The thing is that when you really do the fit for F0, I will say if you add extra constraint from heavy part theory to the F plus, and you do a combine F plus and F zero free, and you know they should be the same at Q squared equals zero, then you will have a much more natural result for this one for F zero. So that is to say, if you have a
natural means close to one.
Right. So if you have a more correct sum for F plus, you should have a more correct sum for F zero too.
But I mean the basic identity for what we call unitarity is pi at Q squared is equal to integral.
No, I understand.
That's so I don't know if you really want to call this unitarity or not, but it's a consequence of analyticity. But it looks like.
So I think the other thing to get to Chris's question, when you fit things, you want to fit things that are easy to fit. Mm-hmm. And particularly in F plus, where there's always a pole not so far away from the physical region when you do it in Q squared, you have to do something about it. And this does something about it in a very simple way, and then leaves you with functions that are very simple. Right? Constant, a straight line, a parabola. The idea comes from estimating the cut as a sum of poles, and you can make that arbitrarily precise. But if you try to model how, and then ask how those functions spill over the physical region. So if you start with Q squared and you try to put the same kind of physics in, you would be fitting a sum of hyperbole. And hyperbole all have the same shape. And so asking a fitter to tell the difference between one hyperbola and the other, it's going to be even worse than fitting a sum of exponentials, right? Which, you know, is really close to no one in his right mind would. There's some exponentials, but you know there we have other things, right? To work with that. Whereas here you take out the leading pole and then the description of all of these poles modeling the cuts is just a series. And yeah, for beta pi in practice unitarity. It doesn't matter, but it is comforting to know that the expansion is convergent in a region of the complex plane larger than where you're using it.
Also, you know, if the Z range is small for the physical, this means that apart from the prefactor, the form factor is essentially a straight line. Z is very small, Z squared is negligible. Every form factor is a straight line as long as Z, the physical range for Z, is small. So there's a lot of physics somehow in going from, generic function of Q squared to say, this is something that we know times a straight line. It's a big statement. So
and Richard Hill actually has some sort of conference proceedings aimed at experimentalists where he did this for all the form factors that you knew anything about, so k to pi, d to k's, and this is seven or 8 years ago now, but at that stage, everything was consistent with a straight line. So the experimental data say they don't care about z squared. It's too small.
So it's not just a conformal transformation. It somehow captures something big.
Yeah, right. So. Unitarity, analyticity, and magic.
Comment from the Baryon community.
Beta factor, I mean, we just use it as a as Andreas was saying, a very useful way to just interpolate between the data and the kinematic range. There, the unitary constraints are more complicated, even in the BCL parameterization, because we've got different form factors contributing. It's linear. Is there, I guess we always included, even for the form factors who don't really have pure poles, you know, the would-be poles are out beyond threshold, we still just included some factor like this pre-factor, which is essentially roughly Q-squared independent, so it's just some overall normalization. But is there any perceived wisdom in doing something like that, or in the B to pi case, in F0, I mean, have people converged on deciding what to do for F0? Do you always have an effective pole?
Well, the Alex sort of said that we do, which is that in B to KLL, which will appear on the archive next week. We do put the pole in because the best estimate of where it is the low threshold. When it's non-strange state, it's up in the cut. So
but it must not matter very much anyway.
Right. Yeah. Try it all different ways, and it doesn't matter much.
So,
correct me if I'm wrong. Omitting the pole for F0 in B to K, it just makes the errors blow up more as you go to Q squared equals zero.
So, if we're all using this as a phenomenological sort of way to fit things, we're not trusting or using the unitarity constraints very much. I don't know so much about this expert term to enforce the derivative, but if that's the case, then is it really equivalent to use this modified set expansion, or and on the other hand, to do your chiral extrapolations first at fixed E, and then have some fictitious data in which you do, which is meant to be physical, in which you do the set expansion. Is it just a matter of whichever is convenient or gives you the best uncertainties?
This is a complicated topic. So RAN has done synthetic data. So the first question is, should we extrapolate to the continuum first and then do the Z expansion, or extrapolate the Z expansion to the continuum? And so the Fermilab philosophy is to go to the continuum first and then do the Z expansion. But I think HPQCD has a different procedure.
We just used a Z expansion in on the lattice, effectively, standard the coefficients in there.
But I mean, is there some theoretical reason why?
Lattice gauge theory, non-zero lattice spacing, is still unitary, and the analogs of these functions are the same analyticity will apply. The main difference is that the finite volume turns the cut into a dense set of poles. We're trying to push them off into a place where they don't bother us, so I'm not worried about that. So I think the thing to worry about would be if the relative position of a semi-leptonic cube squared max, pole from the beginning of the cut, if they were very lattice spacing dependent or Oort mass dependent, and you didn't notice that, didn't take that into account, you might be introducing unwittingly some uncertainty. So, it would be nice if you were doing the modified Z expansion, that to monitor the relative places to make sure that nothing bad is happening.
Strictly speaking, if you use rooted staggered fermions, it isn't unitary by that lattice spacing. I don't know if that would make any difference, but it is.
Okay, so maybe we do have to take the